Hey there, happy Tuesday, and welcome to a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm glad you're here. I'm happy to be here. I probably sound a little different than usual because I'm actually coming back from a two-week vocal odyssey. I mean, I caught the virus that seems to be going around from person to person, but for me, it settled into my vocal cords, and for the first time in my life, I completely lost my voice, laryngitis down to not even being able to whisper for 8 days straight. And it was a really bizarre experience. I mean, I've gotten colds and gotten raspy like all of us, but never completely shut down and not able to communicate and not being able to interact. And yes, being in a forced silent retreat kept me in my brain a little bit, a lot of thoughts, but also just a great appreciation for the ability to speak, something I've always taken for granted. So although I'm a little hoarse, I'm happy to be here. And I'm happy to be here to talk about music and to share a couple interviews I did with guests backstage at Live Oak Music Festival last summer. Timely, because we just announced the lineup, the beginning of the lineup for 2026. Tickets are available now. You can go to the KCBX website and lock in your tickets for 2026. Or if you can't make it to the show, you can also make a donation anytime. Today, I have two interviews with two very different artists, Miko Marks and Chuck Prophet. I love my backstage conversations. They both bring kind of years of wisdom and experience to their music and our conversations. And so I don't have a lot of pre-intro that I want to share. Also got to save my voice. So we're not able to take calls today, but you can always be part of this conversation. If you'd like to send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, you can find us on Facebook, on Instagram. You can send me a message there as well. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can also podcast our show to listen to your convenience. We're on Spotify. Or Apple Podcasts or NPR Podcasts, wherever it is you find your podcasts, just go to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and if you'd leave a review, that'd be helpful for other people to also find our show. And so we're going to start off with Miko Marks. She's an American Americana singer. She's based in Oakland, California. She began her career many years ago in country music, long before Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter. And then she took a break, a hiatus, and then came back with a roar. And we're going to start off our conversation with a little bit of her music, Feel Like Going Home. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. To you.
Okay.
Miko Marks, nice to meet you. Thank you so much for being a part of our backstage conversations here with KCBX. And thank you for coming down. Is this your first Live Oak experience, I would imagine?
Yes, it is. And thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure to talk to you.
And so I'd like to kind of ask the giant general question that you get to go wherever with. Mm-hmm. What's the journey that brings you to Live Oak in 2025?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. It's been a long journey. I'll tell you that. It's been 20 years in the music industry. Oh, wow. And I think what brings me to life, Volk, is the most recent projects that I've released. They've been received really well, and I've been afforded the opportunity to do more festivals. Mm. And Live Oak just so happens to be one in California, where I live. And so I was like, I would love to do that for the first time. And so I'm getting a lot of first after 20 years. So that's what brings me here.
So let's go back then 20 years. You're probably in elementary school?
No.
Junior high, maybe?
No.
What starts your musical journey off? What's the first...
Well, my musical journey actually started when I was like 3.
Okay. Oh, okay.
3 years old, I was singing in my family's living rooms because my mom was like, oh, I think Miko has a voice. Mm-hmm. And so she put me, set up the family to where they'd watch, and she'd give me, like, we'd learn songs together. And a lot of the songs that she presented me with were gospel songs, country songs, some Motown songs, you know, stuff I could sing. Mm-hmm. And I just took a liking to the stories of country music when I was younger because my grandma was from Mississippi and she brought all that music up to Michigan, which is where I'm from. And she exposed me to it at like a really young age. And, you know, country music tells stories. Mm-hmm. So as a kid, I was like, ooh, you know, this is interesting. I'm learning. It's like reading a book almost.
Absolutely.
So I was introduced that way, and I just fell in love with the stories and the genre, and just for that particularly.
And so when did you start performing outside of the family living room?
Well, not too long after that. I was in my youth choir and my church, and my church is Kojic, which is Church of God in Christ. Okay. And so that's not just church on Sundays. That's church on Sunday, Monday through Friday. It's a church... it's just a church way of living. And so our family and our choir would go around to different church conventions and perform. And I was in the youth choir. And so I got exposed really young to performing outside my family.
So do you love the performing, the genres, or picking up boys?
I love...
Because we always ask male performers or male guys in bands tend to always say, I started music because it finding chicks. But we never ask women, did you start doing music so you could find boys?
No. I was really like a late bloomer. Like, I didn't take to singing as a profession until later on in life. Like, I was not... I was kind of scared of my gift when I first... got it at a young age. I go to church, people would fall out, they'd be crying, and so it was kind of traumatizing.
You're little, wondering, I'm little. How am I doing this to you?
Yeah. And so it kind of scared me into where I didn't really want to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so every time people would ask me to sing, I'd be like, no, or I'd get shy and I wouldn't do it. And so it really paralyzed my growth as pursuing it as a thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't start out until like performing, like actually, like I'm gonna do music until I was 29.
Oh, yeah. Which would be considered older, right?
Yeah.
In the world of music.
Absolutely.
And so what was the very first gig? What's the very first song?
The very first song was Find My Way Home. And that is a song that's on my first album, Freeway Bound, which came out in 2005, and it celebrates 20 years this year. And so that was the first song, and I wrote that because I didn't know what I was doing, where I was going, where I'd end up. And I was like, oh, but if I keep moving, I'll find where I belong. I'll find my way home. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first song because it was about, I don't know where I'm going, but I know where I've been, you know. And I just wrote that cleaning my kitchen one day. And I just put this broom down and started writing it down. We didn't have phones back then. And so, and that kind of spun everything going forward. My husband, he took my 3 demo CD to, he was just taking it to everybody. It's not CD, cassette tape.
Oh, that's...
cassette tape.
Not many people even have the players anymore.
I know. But he took it around, and this man named Rod Carter took a liking, and we flew to Nashville. We met with Ron Cornelius, who's like in the Country Music Hall of Fame as a legendary producer, and he produced my first album. And I didn't really, I was still like in a fog about it all, you know, because I really didn't have any targeted goals. Right. I was just like, oh, you can sing. So let's just see if this works, see if this sticks. And yeah, that's what brought me there.
And so was country music the original, I don't know, interest that you had?
Yes.
So would you have said I'm strictly a country artist when you started that first album?
Yes, absolutely.
And 100%. How was that reception then when you were recording that? Because this is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
There was no Beyonce
no.
making an album.
There was no Beyonce. There was only, that I knew about, Reese Palmer.
Okay.
And
name I don't know.
She's a phenomenal singer. Now she has a program on Apple Music where she does all these things. And she really ushers in the new artists. She's like, I call her, she hates it, I call her the Harriet Tubman of country music, because she's just shuffling people in and bringing their names to light, yeah. because there's a lot of us. But at the time, it was just she and I, and I was so jealous of her. I was like, no, why? You're beautiful, you're talented, get out of here. But she's so lovely, and we've become really close friends over the years. And as you get older, you realize there's enough sun for everybody.
Yeah.
And so let it shine on as many people as possible.
Yes, yeah. The abundance of life brings more to
yes,
us.
Yes, yes.
Right? When we start to think that we're not going to have enough, the scarcity mentality really shuts people down.
Yes.
And makes them petty.
Absolutely, and I had that in my youth, because mm-hmm. I think the industry fuels that mm. by its how it operates. It's this competition. There can only be one, mm-hmm. or they can. This is the.
What's your niche?
Yeah, this is the thing that they put on it, and I think that transfers to us as artists. And some of us pick that up, and I picked it up for a while, but I quickly let it go because I realized we're all in the sunlight.
Yeah.
You know.
I love that visual too.
Yeah.
So how have things changed in the music industry for you in the last 20 years? I would imagine, especially in the last 4 or 5 years.
Well,
because you have a lot of awards I've been reading about you.
Well, back in 2008, mm-hmm. when country music, I used to perform at the CMA Festival every year from 2005 to 2008. Well, they changed the rules of who could participate in 2008. And when they did that, that shut me out. You had to be like, you had to have so many albums sold, so many units sold, so many spins, all these criteria that I didn't meet as an independent mm-hmm. artist. And so it completely shut me out, and it shut me down.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so sad and just disenchanted with the industry. So I stopped making music. I stopped. I had my son at the time, and I just became a stay-at-home mom. I started playing a lot of tennis and just living totally a life that was not pursuing music. I still performed mm-hmm. because I love, that's my most favorite aspect of this industry is performing.
And were you doing church also as well?
No, I was doing more local places. Like, we had this place called the Saddle Rack in Fremont. It was a huge country music bar, and then they closed down during COVID. But I used to just stay local and get my angst out mm-hmm. locally, but not recording any music for over 16 years now.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
And were you writing?
No, I was just done.
Okay.
I thought, oh, those are the albums. I did that. Hopefully
that's
some people find
legacy,
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just was done. And I'm a real spiritual person. So in 2019, I had a dream that I was getting back with my old band from 2005. And I was like, I picked up the phone and I called one of the members of the band, Justin Phipps. And
after the dream.
After the dream.
Okay.
And I was like, Justin, we got to make some music. We got to perform. And I'm just thinking jam. Mm-hmm. Like, get
hang
some
out.
Gigs.
Yeah.
Hang out. And then he was like, well, I started this label. It's called Red Tone Records. And it's a nonprofit label. And what it does is it helps marginalized artists like yourself pursue a career in music. We raise the money. We support you. And we put you out into the world. I have a song, Good Night America.
This is just from having the dream?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's like he called to you.
Yeah.
In your dream.
Yeah.
Okay.
He did. Because I saw us in the dream. We were playing and we were having fun and they're just great musicians. I had no idea he started a label. I had no idea that he was doing that. it had been so many years, mm-hmm. and I just didn't know. Other members of the band went off to do great things. And so he sent me Goodnight America, and that song, it just floored me, because we were at the time of so much turmoil, so much George Floyd, mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. all this stuff. And Goodnight America is a lullaby about America's wrongs and how to rewrite those wrongs, like acknowledge them and but put them to bed. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, in my early years, I would not have done that song. It was too political, too heavy, too true. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't the roses that I liked to paint in my early years. It was real. Mm-hmm. And so
it would require you to own the words,
yes,
right?
Yes, it required me to own my truth.
Yeah.
And so I absolutely did the song.
Yeah.
And from that song, we were like, want to do another one? And want to do another one? And it was like, whoa, I think we got an album here.
And so, are you writing music now?
Yeah.
Back, you're in the groove.
We started with Our Country back in 2020. Yeah. And we released it in 2020, I believe. Yeah. And we just kept going organically. It wasn't like planned. Mm-hmm. It just started happening. And then I was like, I'm back in it. I'm back in this place where, I don't know, it's changed a lot. Social media came around. I had grown as a woman, mm-hmm. lived some life, mm-hmm. that was heavy, dark, mm-hmm. beautiful, and peaceful, but also anxiety driven. I had so much to sing about.
Yeah. You needed to live the years probably to write, get yes. something to draw from.
Yes.
Because all the sunshine and roses we feel when we're young.
Yeah.
Transforms once we become mothers.
Yeah.
And raising families. So then in 2022, is that when I don't know if it's inducted in the country, CMT's Next Women of Country Class of 2022?
Yes.
How does that come about?
I released Goodnight America, and then we did like a couple more singles. And then I don't know if there was this surge of organizations like Equal Access and M Theory who wanted to support marginalized artists, and they found me. And Leslie Fram, who is one of CMT's, she used to be one of CMT's just high advocate for women and women of color. And so they reached out and was like, we want to have you be a part of our class, our next Women of Country. And I was like, well, yeah. They wanted to honor the work that I was doing and also help and support me in what I was doing currently.
And so it sounds kind of like the feminine collective idea.
Yes.
Of having a group that helps elevate you. Because I would imagine it's hard to do it in isolation. I can't
yes.
imagine anyone makes it in the industry just on their own.
Absolutely. You need a lot of angels. You mm-hmm. need a lot of support and a lot of people holding the door open for you to walk through. Now, how you do that is up to you, but mm-hmm. you definitely need support.
And so what does it mean to be part of this class? What kind of opportunities came from that?
So many. Oh, my gosh. So many. I was given a grant to finish the music that I was creating. I got to be involved in a lot of different things that Country Music Association was doing because I was a member of that class. And so I got a chance to go to the awards and go to different panels and YouTubes, and performance opportunities came up in Nashville that weren't readily there for me before. So definitely some doors were open for me.
And you're located though in Oakland.
Yes.
You're not in Nashville.
Nope.
So how does a country music artist, and would you consider yourself still country music? Because it says in your bio that it's country, blues, southern rock, and some gospel.
I think I'm a little further away from country, traditional country music, than I ever have been in my mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. But it is also my authentic place. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel very connected to the music that I'm making now. Whereas before, I was connected to the music, but I was also genre driven. You know, I was focused in on country music, kind of ignoring my other gifts as far as different influences that have been in that I have naturally. So I kind of mm-hmm. ignored them when I was pursuing that country road. So I definitely say I'm more Americana now, where that's a just a melting pot of everything. Mm-hmm. So what you read off is definitely where I stand now. Southern rock, blues, soul, with a little bit of country in there.
So how does Oakland sound play into who you are? Because it's a really distinctive musical community.
You know, the thing about Oakland is it's not really a place for country music. Mm-mm. And so I've had to travel a lot, East Coast, South, to do Northwest, to do the music that I want to do. So I haven't really found that home. Although there's Freight and Salvage in Berkeley, which is like a really sweet place for all music genres to come. So if anything, if it's a place like that, then I can do it. The Guild Theater in Menlo Park, those kind of places.
Oh, yeah.
I get to play. And it's very narrow for country, but it's a wide open road for Americana.
And how have you balanced, you know, the stay-at-home mom, your husband's a firefighter?
Yeah, he's a retired firefighter, and I'm divorced now.
Okay.
But I was married.
Edit that up.
But I was married for, he's a good dude. We are so good. Like, and we got divorced because he wanted to retire and move to Hawaii.
Oh.
And I wanted to pursue my music. So it wasn't that anything happened. Our lives just kind of went in different directions, but we're still very close. Very close.
And how old's your son?
He's 29.
Okay. Wow.
I just look young.
Okay. You knew I was going to say that, didn't you?
I am not.
No.
Not young as I look.
Okay. Good for you.
Yeah. I'm close to in my mid-50s. Yeah.
Okay, so there's that second inspirational thing, because we have such a youth-based culture where you need to have accomplished everything by the time you're 30. As I mentioned, I teach at the university, mm-hmm. and the stress I see in my students of feeling like they have to have been done with all their life by the time they're 30, there's not enough stories of actually raising your family and then having a life.
Yeah.
We never really talk about that. We ask women to do everything at the same time.
We require so much of ourselves. The outside world requires so much of women. When I raised my son, I took him on the road. Mm. I gave him an instrument, and now he's off and running, playing stadiums and doing different shows as a guitarist. He's gone, girl. And when I say gone, he's just really successful in his music craft, and I'm really proud of him.
I was going to say, how does that feel to have, like, continued another generation of musicians?
I'm really proud of him. I had the bandwidth to not give him any video games when he was little. He couldn't play any, but there was one. There was Guitar Hero.
Yes.
So as soon as he finished that game, I said, you want a real guitar? He was like 8. Mm-hmm. And then he said, yeah. And so he's been playing since.
So does he ever tour with you?
No, because we have two different styles. You know, he does stadiums and I do like the Grand Ole Opry. He's like, that's cute, Mama. Good job.
So where do you see your role in music moving forward? Because you're kind of at that elder status, I would imagine,
yes.
for other artists.
I see my role as, I want to be like Mavis. I want to still be performing. I want people to be looking at me like Mama Miko. I want to usher in the youth and the young people coming up. I want to help them as much as I can. You know, I want to be like somebody that is a source. Mm-hmm. For the, like, you're a source for your students. I want to be a source for up and coming artists.
Yeah.
So.
And do they find you, or do you go out and search for them?
I find them sometimes. I'll find somebody like Camille Parker. She's a young country music artist. She's in the vein of Taylor Swift, and she's kind of in the Carrie Underwood vein, mm-hmm. but she's also a person of color. So I reached out to her because she had a song, and I thought it was just great. So I try to be a mentor wherever I can, mm-hmm. you know, where the music resonates with me, and I can see them, I can see myself in them. And so I try to help in that regard, as far as like what my path was like and what they can learn from me. I try to give that away.
And where does your musical inspirations come from these days? Are they more politically driven? Are they more, you talked about stories being so important to you when you were 3, when you first started listening to music.
Yes.
Are you a storyteller, or are you a protest singer? Do you have?
I have elements of both, mm-hmm. you know. I feel like I have to speak to the times in music too, because it's important to me to leave a legacy of what's going on and have the music connect to that. But I also, I'm a dreamer, and I like to sing my, you know, songs about inspirations. Like I just wrote one called Sail While the Tide is High, mm-hmm. and it's about living life to its fullest, that kind of thing. So nothing to do with politics, just about grabbing life in every breath that you get to take and really appreciating that and being grateful and being in the moment.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, my guest has been Miko Marks, country, southern rock, soulful gospel.
Yes.
Musician, artist, mother.
Yes.
Many things on the planet, and also continuing to thrive in her past 30 years.
Yes.
I really appreciate you taking the time to sit with me and chat today.
Thank you.
I'm really looking forward to hearing you up on stage.
Thank you. I live, eat, breathe music now in a way that is so, it's so beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, the connection that I have to music now, mm-hmm. as opposed to when I first started.
You got teary when you started saying that. What comes up?
Because I finally realized how to use the gift that I have for me and my and the audience that hears it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really beautiful thing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now I want to talk to you for another hour because you just like tapped into that thing that you can have your family and you can find your gift. Could you have done this when you were 25? Could you have been this person in writing this music at 25?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I didn't have the life experience that I have. And I've had some hard times in the midst of, I've struggled with depression. I've struggled with anxiety. Mm-hmm. I've struggled with the inner critic, mm-hmm. you know, the things that I wasn't enough, you know. I've mm-hmm. struggled with a lot of that. And then that turned into alcoholism mm-hmm. in a way that was not benefiting me. Thankfully, by the grace, that obsession was removed. And so now I'm living this totally clear and free life, and it feels really, so I don't think I would have been able to do any of the music that I'm doing today with the passion and the real root of it coming from within. It would have been pretend, mm-hmm. and it's not.
Mm-hmm. That's the juice of life mm-hmm. that I think more women of our generation need to share. It's like, you're going to get to your richest stuff mm-hmm. later.
Absolutely.
So do your work now, right? Of being whoever that is, mom, nurturer.
I'm a better mom now.
Yeah.
I'm like so good. I'm like, girl, you just did that.
Yeah.
I'm like so much better. And you're the first person I've told about my alcoholism. I've never told anybody. So
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I've never told anybody about that, but on the other side of it, I think that a lot of us go through things like that, but mm-hmm. we keep it quiet, mm-hmm. we don't say anything, and we slowly either get it together or we die.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and then everyone just shakes their head.
Yeah, I'm trying to be more ready to talk about it, you know. It's still really new, but I'm also trying to be really ready to tell my truth.
Well, because something greater than you
yeah.
is making you do this now.
Yeah.
Right? You're tied into something greater than just you as an individual.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That power I feel all the time, mm-hmm. especially when I'm talking to people who have an artist soul. I don't know what that is.
It's a fine line between genius and insanity. It really is. Mm-hmm.
And well, you said it didn't feel like a gift when you were young because it is a lot to carry.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then people start wanting things from you.
Absolutely. And that's fine. And then I have to learn how to say no, mm-hmm. which I'm not very good at. I am not. I want to do it all. I'm like, sure, sure. You know, but that, you know, I feel like the place that I'm in right now is the best place I could possibly be mm-hmm. with all the little things that may or may not be right. Mm-hmm. They're not going to cause me any harm.
They're not loud.
Yeah, they're not loud. Mm-hmm.
Your voice is loud.
Yeah, that's loud.
I love it. I can't wait. Miko Marks, thank you again for spending some time right here with us on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Thank you.
Baby, I, baby, I.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Miko Marx singing This Time as we wrapped up our conversation that flew by way too quickly backstage at Live Oak Music Festival 2025. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And this week, we're celebrating Live Oak and the announcement of the 2026 headliners, Charlie Musselwhite, Neil Francis, Jackie Venson, and that tickets are on sale already. You can get them at the KCBX website to be a part of this fabulous weekend and also to support the efforts here of your local NPR station. For our second conversation today, we're going in a completely different musical direction with Chuck Prophet. Chuck Prophet is a California-based singer-songwriter. He's a guitarist. He's a producer. And for his first visit to the Live Oak stage, he brought his own sound together with his newfound love of cumbia music and his collaboration with the band Quien Sabe from Salinas. And he also introduced his latest album, Wake the Dead. And this love of cumbia music is just another musical adventure in a long career that began in the 1980s with the neo-psychedelic band Green on Red. So to introduce you to Chuck Prophet, I thought we'd jump in with a little bit of another one of Chuck Prophet's sounds, and this is Summertime Thing, right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Sun's burning down on the pavement. Money in the bank, I ain't gonna save it. Jenna come by, hope she makes it. Jenna coming by, I sure hope she makes it.
Chuck Prophet, backstage here at Live Oak Music Festival. I guess my first question is, how did you find your way to being a musician? Like, were you born playing?
Well,
or?
No, I didn't come from a musical family, but I grew up in Southern California, Orange County, in a town called La Habra, and there was a lot of music in the air. My sisters had pretty excellent records, and really, I got into music as a listener.
What was the first awakening, first musical awakening?
Like Rolling Stones, mm-hmm. and the radio, really, it was the radio from an early age, because sometimes I'll hear a song and I know every like nook and cranny of the landscape, and I'm like, well, this was a record, this was a hit when I was 3 or 4 years old, But so I would say the car radio.
And so did you start off playing in bands in high school? Did you start off writing music?
I started playing in bands in like junior high.
Oh, wow, okay.
I got an electric guitar when I was 12 or 13, 12, I guess, and played in a neighborhood band, and, used to pick up sheet music from the music stores, put it in my peachy after school, and then take it home and copy it, and then put it back, and the next day I would steal another song and put it in my peachy and copy it out, and then bring it back.
I love the reference to the peachy.
Yeah, and so, that's how I learned sort of how to play chords and how songs were structured, but later I did get some pretty excellent guitar lessons when I was in the seventh grade for maybe 3 months or so. I had an excellent teacher, and I learned most of the useful stuff that I play every time I pick up a guitar.
It still comes in handy.
Yeah, I learned sort of the secret language, pentatonic scale and what a triad is and chords and things like that. Inversions, I don't know if I knew all the technology or the terminology, but those are the things I learned.
Did the writing of songs come first or the curiosity?
No, I wanted to, I remember coming home, I was one of those kids that didn't really play sports, so I would come home from school and watch the daytime talk shows with my mother, Donna Shore, Merv Griffin, John Davidson, Mike Douglas, all that stuff. And so I was very fascinated by, music and performers. And one time my mom was ironing there, and I was like eating graham crackers, and Iggy Pop came on, and he had David Bowie. I knew who David Bowie was, and David Bowie was playing keyboards, and Iggy Pop, you know, ripped his shirt off, and was, and I just thought, well, you know, I don't know what I got to do to hang out with people like that, but that's my goal. You know,
interesting.
I wasn't like, oh, I want to be a musician or composer or songwriter. No, I just want to hang out with people like that, you know. But there were certain people along the line that woke up some, gave me that arty, just kind of woke it up in, inside of me, you know. I mean, I remember when Pancho and Lefty was a hit for Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard, and I had an AM radio in my car. And just, you know, the words, like thinking, oh, it's so powerful what you can do with words. And during the punk era, I wasn't really writing songs, but, you know, I was listening to people like Jim Carroll and stuff, thinking, wow, man, you know, if you really know what you're doing, you can really do something beautiful with words. So, you know, I can't say that I was, like, a gifted, you know, writer. Or, I mean, I have a couple learning disabilities, so... You know, I don't know. I just wanted to play in bands.
And hang out with the cool people.
Yeah, and hang out with interesting people.
Interesting people, yes.
And so I played in bands, you know, and when you're with your friends and you have a band, you don't really call it songwriting. You're just kind of making things up and putting things together. And that's where it came from initially, you know, but it's been a long...
Couple of years.
It's been a long road,
Do you remember your first gig?
I think it was a house party, but we were pretty professional. I mean, we were pretty dialed in, you know, with, like, what we were wearing. And, you know, I was wearing clothes out of my sister's closet.
Ah. You know. Was it glam rock era?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, and the gig didn't go well. And I was I just remember I was, like, so crushed. Just so defeated by the whole experience, and I just wanted to get better, I guess.
Something was driving it.
I guess so.
So here you are just a few decades later on the music circuit, and I was reading a bit of your bio. Usually I don't like to pre-bio because I love to meet people just kind of raw.
Well, it's okay. It's still pretty raw.
Is it? So I'm just curious how, you know, your musical genres, how they shifted. And it says you're an alt-country person, but now you've found your cumbia. Is it kind of like a period, like a painter's period? Have you gone through multiple different moods of music?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm attracted to guitar-centric music.
Okay.
And, I mean, yeah, I mean, I like so much music, you know, and I like disco and bluegrass and, you know... reggae music, and you know, it would be difficult for me to really classify what I do.
That's nice.
I think in England, in the late, during the pre-punk era, there was something called pub rock, you know, and they might play, you know, a Link, like a pub rock band would be equally in touch with Link Ray, Motown, and the Byrds, you know, and I think that in many ways, maybe encapsulates what I do. You know, maybe what I'm playing is pub rock.
I like that. Because it has a feeling of community and expression and gathering.
Well, you know, I mean, you're only as cool as your record collection.
Oh, I like that too.
You know.
What's the first record you ever bought?
I think it was Heartbeat. It's a Love Beat by the DeFranco family. I bought the 7-inch at the drugstore. We were living in Cleveland at the time. I wish it was something cooler, but that's...
Mine was Meet the Monkees.
Well... Great place to start.
I love that.
Yeah.
So where are you now in your kind of motivation for music? Because you've been touring for a long time. You've had a lot of experiences. Like, do you still get the same buzz from traveling and doing these shows?
Yeah. I mean, the challenge is finding new ways to do the same old stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when I put this cumbia band together, we really was a blended family between a group called Quien Sabe from Salinas and my band, the Mission Express. We kind of blended the family together to play this cumbia music. And so the challenge was, you know, can we do this? And will it work? You know, will people dance? And so that was a challenge. And the Quien Sabe guys were in many ways my teachers, you know. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes with cumbia music, you know, they might just play one chord and go for 10 minutes. I'm not as likely to do that because I'm such a slave to traditional song structure. So I think if I brought anything to it, I brought up my kind of that, my slavish values to you know, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, chorus, that kind of thing. So where I'm at this very moment is the fact that, you know, there was a pretty good response to this record, and that led to a lot of gigs, and we're 70, 80 record gigs deep now. I guess my goal is to make another Cumbia record so that we have more songs to choose from, because we have a pretty limited set, you know.
But you,
because
like,
we're a one-album band, essentially.
Oh, interesting. So you don't pull from your individual,
and that
work?
Includes the one, the songs that I pulled in Cumbia-fied, you
okay.
know.
From yeah. your own collection.
Yeah.
But you still have a great time doing this.
Oh, sure. I mean, not always. When it's clicking and the band's got my back and everybody's grooving and the sound's good, I still enjoy it. I mean, it's it kind of calms me down and winds me up at the same time.
You know, the performing or the traveling piece?
All of it. And I like traveling, you know. I mean, I try to take an interest in things and try to take an interest in food and architecture and, you know, just... It makes traveling more interesting.
Where are you located? What's your home base?
I'm San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Very
much from Bohemia.
Just,
you know,
wherever that lands in every state, Bohemia
yeah,
land.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Where did you grow up going to shows?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Who were you seeing? Because I'm wondering if we're close in the same age or if you're a lot younger than I am.
Well, I saw some band, like, you know, when I was a kid in L.A., I saw Quiet Riot with Randy Rhoads. And mm-hmm. That was a big deal. I saw him at the Starwood. I guess I was about 14. Then when my family moved to San Francisco, I saw, you know, all kinds of punk shows, Wall of Voodoo and Black
Dead
Flag.
Dead Kennedys.
And then, yeah, I saw the DKs. And, I saw him at the Babuhay Gardens, which is a pretty small place, you know.
Were you in San Francisco or did you grow up in the Bay Area?
My family lives in the East Bay.
Okay.
You know? So, yeah.
Because growing up and going to shows in San Francisco was... I look back on it, one, can't believe my parents just let us.
Well, why not?
Louisiana? I don't know.
I mean,
because we were always getting
more,
into trouble.
It's probably more damaging to say no.
That's true, because we would have found a way out either.
Yeah.
So when you think about music, where it is right now, and kind of the way technology is...
Yeah.
How does that... I don't know, influence you or impact?
Well, I mean, I complain about it, but,
okay.
You know, I have an album cover from 2014 that was, you know, a record that I stubbornly made pretty much all analog, but the cover is an iPhone photo, you know. What are you going to do? These are just tools. I'm not a spokesman for streaming versus, you know, I mean, I'm a record collector, and that's the way I choose to listen to music, but... You know, I was talking to my friend Joe Goldmark, who owns one of the owners of Amoeba Records, and I remember when at the height of the sort of the Napster scare, mm-hmm. I asked him, "What do you think about all this? You know, these MP3s?" And he goes, "Well, you know, I see people walking around with those white things in their ears, and I see people on the bus with these white things." He goes, "Hey, man, they're listening to music."
Yeah.
And I can't agree more. You know, but a lot of the streaming stuff, I think, has helped me.
Just to get more listens?
Just
more people?
It's more democratic, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, people share music and they return to things they like, and a lot of people wouldn't have been exposed to my music otherwise. So I think it's been pretty great on a number of levels.
Especially because that's how young people are getting their music. So if you want to stay current, but... I think the other part of my question was the AI influence in songwriting and...
Good luck. I mean, if you can make somebody cry with an AI song, then all the power to you. I mean, if you can write Poncho and Lefty... If you can write In My Room, mm-hmm. or if you can write, you know, The Look of Love and sing it like Dusty Springfield, I mean, good luck. There's no AI that's going to do that, that can recreate that feeling. They can recreate generic stuff.
Yeah.
And there's already people doing that.
Yeah.
Half the radio is, you know, generic.
Pop.
It's just, you know, bad copies of other things. And so who cares?
I mean, I always wonder if that nostalgia piece plays, you know, into it, that if you can go far on the ledge with AI and a lot of technology, that the wave goes the other direction, and that all of a sudden there's a calling for, let's bring back more grassroots music or grassroots ways of creating connection with each other.
Well, I don't know. Music doesn't drive the culture the way it once did, but, you know, my wife, Stephanie, who is, you know, my everything, and she teaches, and, you know, once Napster came along, you know, she started having 9-year-old kids asking her if she'd ever heard the Ramones. And people seek it out.
Yeah.
And so if people are seeking out music, who's to say that's bad?
Yeah, yeah. I agree. How long has Stephanie been your everything?
Well, I think we started probably dating around 89 or something. We don't really know. There was some overlap there, so we're not really even sure.
It's not pinpointing
but, yeah,
it.
But, well, I think we got married in 1998. So we've been playing the music together the whole time. And so that's been a big part. It's been a big shared experience. And hasn't all been great, but it's been a big shared experience all the same.
So what does the mental health piece and music work for you? Do you connect the balance in your life to being able to perform in music?
It helps me to get out of my head, really, more than anything. I mean, when I quit drinking 27 years ago or whatever I remember I'd be on stage and I'd be like, you know, halfway through the first chorus and I'd be like, how long is this song? You know? So, it's affected me. But that's all right. I mean, I think that I kind of confused excitement with, you know, music and good music. You know, sometimes good music's kind of boring.
Ooh, you know. Tell me how. Because it just falls into the
background. To one person, to hear a classical would be kind of boring, but, you know, if you're actually, you know, hearing classical music with an incredible orchestra and a beautiful room with beautiful acoustics, it can be pretty loud, and it can punch you in the gut, man. You know, it can be really beautiful. So,
do you ever get emotional listening to other people's music?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have your go-to cry song?
Well, I don't have a go-to, but every once in a while something will come along, you know. Tom Petty has a song, it's called, I don't know what the title is, but the refrain is, I forgive it all. Mm. And I think it's pretty powerful. And there's others.
What's a song in your repertoire that is a go-to emotion song?
I don't know. I think my feelings about my songs are probably colored by the way the other people hear them. So I know that Summertime Thing is a joyful song for a lot of people. And I know that No Other Love can be, you know, pretty emotional. So, open-ended song, I mean, I don't, like, it's an open-ended song. It could be about love of a significant other. It could be a mother's love. It could be, you know, God or something in kind of an interchangeable way. I don't know, you know. That's a song that I just kind of pulled out of the air, you know. It's been a good song. It's three chords and, you know, it's got like 12 words total, but it's been a good song for me, and I see girls in Latin America playing it on ukuleles and sending it out to their mother, and it makes me very proud.
When you write music, is there a feeling of giving it away to become whatever people hear, or do you have an attachment?
I'm just trying to make a good record. Okay. No, I don't. I mean, that's like
too deep.
It's just, yeah. you know, the challenge is to make a good record. Mm-hmm. The challenge is to make a record that, you know, when you get to the end, you know what those records are. You put the needle back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the side of an album you just keep listening to over and over. I don't know what that is, but that's the goal.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you feel like you've
make something that's that has that pull
to re-experience over and over and over again?
Yeah. Yeah.
You went through a health scare recently.
Yes.
Cancer. Mm-hmm. I guess that's not a scare. That's an actual thing.
I use the expression health scare. You might have picked that up somewhere.
Okay. So how did it impact you, your music, your life? Or did it?
Well, it came at the end of the pandemic. So back to back, you know, those things really forced me to stop. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I would have stopped otherwise. I don't know what's going to reach out and grab me and make me stop. So, you know, I had a lot of time to reflect. And of course, when you're diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma.
That's pretty serious.
Before, you know, in the interim, between the diagnosis itself and being able to meet with an oncologist was about 14 days, and I didn't know, you know, if I was going to make it through the year. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that was pretty scary stuff, you know. I mean, I'm sort of a mortality denier.
Okay.
You know? Mm-hmm. In the sense that I don't really think about mortality. It's like somebody in the distance, you know. You can't, they're coming towards you, but you really maybe make out a fuzzy figure, but you don't really see what they look like. And it's kind of nothing to be concerned about. But after I was diagnosed with cancer and after I started, you know, chemo and everything, it was like I just couldn't shake it. Just thinking about mortality all the time. Mm-hmm. How much time have I got? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? I never thought about the dude. Now, there he is.
It's starting to become a little more
he's
clear.
Coming, there he is. He's coming for me.
Yeah.
He's coming for everybody.
Yeah.
And so that changed me. And then I think I became a little bit nicer of a person, probably. And I was lucky enough to get some great treatment, and honestly, there's been times that I, you know, I go through the whole day without thinking about it.
Does that feel like a win?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. To reclaim some of yourself.
Just to have some serenity in spite of everything. In spite of, the Grim Reaper coming for me.
In that reality that there's less that direction than that direction?
Yes.
That's big.
What did John Lennon say? You and me have memories longer than the road that stretches out ahead.
Well, that's a great line. Is that from a song?
Yeah. You and me have memories longer than the road that stretches out ahead. The two of us. Yeah, it's called The Two of Us.
I like that. So what's the couple bucket list things then for Chuck Prophet before?
Well, I don't know. About, I don't. At first, I'd have to get a bucket. You know.
I know it's such a weird term. I was trying to think of something else really fast.
I mean, I'm kind of hoping. I've been, you know, looking at a lot of Costa Rica spots because I want to go surfing in Costa Rica after all this touring's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Sock some money away and go down there for a few weeks and go surfing. So that's my thing right now.
I like that immediately. That
I'm kind of holding on to that.
That's a nice one.
End of the summer. See if I can get my wife interested, you know. See how that goes.
Did your marriage change going through the cancer together?
Yeah, we're closer for sure. So we're also closer as a result of the pandemic.
Yeah.
For sure.
People either got closer or that was the end.
Yeah,
of
it definitely was a magnified. What was going on, for sure. Yeah, it gets pretty real. Sooner or later, like Neil Young said, Walk on. Sooner or later, it all gets real. Walk on.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to today's conversation with Chuck Prophet and with Miko Marks. And I hope you're as excited for Live Oak 2026 as I am. Tickets are available, started yesterday. Some of the headliners for the weekend will be Charlie Musselwhite, Jackie Venson, Neil Francis, the Brothers Comatose will be back again. Uncle Lucius will be there. We're celebrating music, celebrating sound. And after spending a couple weeks in the silent retreat, I am just celebrating the ability to speak at all. So as always, thank you for being a part of the conversation. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook. You can always listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show, wherever it is you find your podcasts. Thank you for supporting our station. Thank you for being a part of our community. Look forward to talking to you next Tuesday at 2, right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
No other love, Mama, I'm flying. No other love, Mama, I'm flying. I can go anywhere. No other love can take me there.